2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and we are taking your phone calls 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Good afternoon, Governor.
Hey, Maria, it's great to be back with you again. It's hard to believe it's been a month already.
I know, and we always have so many questions lined up, so we really appreciate you spending this time each month to answer the questions of our listeners. And, Governor, the first thing off the top, of course, is about fire and the heat and water. But let's start with fireworks, because our first texter is saying, Governor, please, please ban fireworks. And that's not really something that you can do, right?
Well, that's correct. So we had a legal opinion from the Attorney General's office and my office, as the attorneys worked together last night, that was delivered, that said I don't have the authority to ban fireworks in the state, that only the legislature can do that. And they have said they are not interested in that. Now, it is possible for local governments to place some bans there. The statute is a little bit of a mess. I'm encouraging the legislature to address this in the coming session to try to clean that up a little bit. It depends on where the city is located and how close it is to the wildland urban interface and some different things. But certainly cities can put some restrictions in their communities, if not the entire communities, to ban fireworks. And look, I don't want this to get into an argument over whether government should be involved or shouldn't be involved. Let me just be very clear: like, people should not be lighting off fireworks this year. It's far too dry. Even the stuff that you think is green, the stuff that looks green around you is drier than it's ever been for this time of year, and the ability for one spark to set things off, just one stray spark, can cause $1 million a day fire. The other thing I want to remind people is that if you do start a fire, even if fireworks are legal in the area that you're lighting them off, you will be held responsible for that. You will have to pay for the fighting of that fire, and it can get very expensive very, very quickly. And so we are in not just extreme drought, but we are in what's called exceptional drought, which is the highest drought level in much of the state. And so this is definitely not the year to take any chances at all with fireworks. And so really urging people to be careful, urging local communities to put restrictions in place, and then check with your local community to understand where those restrictions are.
Right. I know this is a tough one for folks to understand why you just can't outright ban them. Our KSL listeners know that we have several fires every afternoon, or we have had this week, due to cars, you know, or sparks from machinery. So it really is a crucial situation.
Yeah, we had a major fire yesterday right in the middle of the heart of the Salt Lake Valley. We are seeing those fires every day. We have over 300 fires that have already burned in the state. And at this time last year, that was less than 100. So that tells you what kind of, and by the way, last year was a bad year. Last year we had over 60 fires that were started just by fireworks alone. And so you're right. right. A hot car just pulling over on the side of the road can start a fire. Chains that are dragging, target shooting. Fires that people put while they're camping. They have to be in fire rings, and they're illegal in most places. Fireworks are now illegal until July 2nd everywhere, and they will be illegal outside of city limits everywhere. We are able to do that, and I've already done that, but we just need everybody to be responsible and be careful and just save them for next year.
You mentioned you can't ban fireworks, but what about water restrictions?
Yeah, so we have additional water restrictions in every district in the state right now. Now water restrictions are also done at a local level because water resources are different in every district, and so please pay special attention. There's also much more enforcement going around those water restrictions. In some areas, they're doing a three strikes policy. People that are watering on days that they're not supposed to be watering or at hours that they're not supposed to be watering can have their secondary water completely shut off. So again, that enforcement is increasing. What we're encouraging people to do is to only water twice a week. Yes, that means your lawn will turn yellow and maybe a little brown. No, it won't die. It will be okay. Lawns are very resilient. They will come back. And we need you to mow your lawn at the highest setting on your lawnmower. That's actually better for your grass, better for the root system, and we'll need it to use less water. So those water restrictions are happening everywhere. Check with your local district to understand which days you're able to water and how many times a week and which hours during the day you're eligible to water.
Governor, I'm going to go to our phone lines just a bit early here. We have John in Ogden who is concerned about this issue. And John, good afternoon. What is your question?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Governor. I'm just wondering if there's any plans of legislation or some kind of matching program for Utah residents to go a dryscape, either a turf lawn or something to kind of combat our water use on our lawns. Right now, the stipulations are you have to have a perfect lawn to get anything. Can we, say, change that to, say, a matching program by the state for people that are willing to go with a turf lawn or some kind of dry, low water scape? Because this drought's not going anywhere, man.
Yeah, John, thank you for the question. And the answer is yes, that there is a proposal. We will be working with the legislature on that. We do have some communities that have looked at that and started to implement that. I know down in southern Utah, they're looking at that as well. It's something I'm very interested in. It's something I'm going to be pushing for. I have to congratulate the legislature and thank them. They set aside a significant portion of money for some water conservation issues. We're working with them now on how we can use that money. We will be using some of it for to meter secondary water. In far too many of our water districts, there is no metering of secondary water, so we have no idea how much we're even using personally. And we desperately want to change that. But also want to two things. One, I want to be able to help incentivize people who decide on a turf replacement to help them to make that happen. You can have beautiful landscapes that don't necessarily need to be turf, and we would love to see that change. And then to change some of the rules and regulations around new developments, because you're right, in some communities it's actually required that we have turf in park strips and next to businesses and fast food establishments where we certainly don't need grass, and we end up watering the sidewalks more often than we water the grass there anyway. So we've got to change the way we do new development and then help incentivize more conservation in existing development.
Governor, a couple of quick questions for you on COVID before we go to the break. The first one, only about 60% at last I checked, only about 60% of Utahns have now been vaccinated. Is that disappointing to you?
Well, we certainly would like to have more. We look very carefully at the adult population numbers, and right now our adult population, so 18 and over, we have a 64.3% that have been vaccinated. The national average, by the way, is 65%. So we are basically right at the national average. So it depends on whether your glass is half full or half empty, whether that's good news. I mean, the good news is we're doing better than half. half the country, but we're doing worse than half the country too. So I want to do better. I believe we can do better. We had a goal to get at least, again, one dose of vaccination for 70% of our adult population by July 4th. Unless we see a huge increase over the next 2 weeks, we're probably not going to hit that. We will get to 70%, though. I'd love to get even higher than that. Look, if you think back, I'd love all of us to just imagine March and April of last year when we were just learning about this virus and when we would have done anything. No amount of money was too small, no amount of technology, anything. We would have done anything to prevent this terrible disease from happening and the destruction that it had on families. 2,500 people dead in the state of Utah, hundreds of thousands nationwide, businesses devastated, the economy struggled. And while we're doing so much better, it's because of this vaccine. It is a miracle, and we need to treat it as such. And so if you just think of where we were, what we would have done, and now we have it. We have that answer. It's here. It doesn't cost people anything. It's free. Mild side effects. It prevents death and hospitalization. I have to tell you how sad it is now every day when I see people and talk to people's families who have had people die over the past couple weeks, or who are hospitalized right now just struggling for breath, and to know that and to hear them say, I wished I would have listened. I wished I would have got my vaccine. My dad, my aunt, they shouldn't be dead right now. They shouldn't be in the hospital right now. We can do more. We're also seeing more variants come into the state, and these variants, especially the Delta variant, we know from what we've seen in other countries, are much more contagious and tend to last longer and have more severe symptoms. Those are all things we're worried about. But the great news is that the vaccine works just as well against them as the other variants, and so it absolutely worked. Just really quickly, right now, 95% of people that have been hospitalized since the vaccine was opened to everyone have been unvaccinated. 98% of those deaths. We've only had 3 deaths of people that were vaccinated from COVID. It's so very, very rare. This is how we protect each other, and this is how we protect ourselves and our families.
Right. And Governor, the number of cases have been going up. We were well below 300, and I noticed yesterday that the numbers were well above 400. New cases.
So, what we've seen is we use the rolling 7-day average, and we got down to the low 200s per 7 days, and now we're up to about 280 is the rolling 7-day average right now. So we have seen an increase. It's been pretty steady now for about a week. It's kind of stabilized there around 270 to 280 over that 7-day rolling average. And so that's concerning. We're not headed in the right direction. Still much lower than our big surges. And again, people that are vaccinated have virtually nothing to worry about, and that's why we're encouraging more and more people to get vaccinated.
And we are taking your questions on Let Me Speak to the Governor. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and we are taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's go right to our phone lines. James is waiting patiently. Good afternoon, James. What is your question?
Well, hi, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor Cox. Anyhow, basically, I was reading in the news about the new Utah driver's licenses and ID cards being rolled out to kind of thwart counterfeiters from making it more harder to duplicate or a copy, that is. And I just had a question. I know not everybody has a birth date the same year, and it'll take a gradual process. What's the rough estimate where everybody will kind of have the new format? And I assume both old and new styles will be in circulation kind of at once, won't they?
James, it's great to hear from you again, and you're exactly right. So for those that missed the announcement yesterday, we do have new driver's licenses that are being rolled out right now. Now the good news for the people of the state of Utah is that they are more secure, which is exactly what you mentioned. The other good news is it's not costing us anymore. This is under our existing contract with the company that produces driver's licenses, and we will just be circulating them. So we will have two. You're exactly right. Over time, as people get their renewals or get a new driver's license, they will get the new one. And so licenses are currently set to expire. You asked the question how long. I believe it's 8 years that it will take to circulate through all of those. So we will have those two designs for some time. But we're very excited for the new licenses. And if you're interested, you can, people do have the ability to request a duplicate license, and you can do that. It's a $23 fee if you request a new one right now. But the good news is when you have a birthday and your old one expires, you'll get the new design when it's your turn.
Sounds good. Thanks, Governor.
All right,
thank
Governor,
you.
Next texter is asking, they want to know what you think about residential water use only being about 10% of our usage in the state. And what about agricultural, government, commercial usage? This person says it seems like we could have a much bigger impact focusing there.
Well, we are focusing there. We're focusing everywhere, and that's the thing about a drought, is that every drop we're able to conserve is important for all of us. And so the answer is yes. Farmers are conserving. In fact, farmers are conserving a lot more than we're asking you to conserve with your lawns. In many places, including my own farm, we've seen approximately a 70% reduction in our normal water usage. So that's big. And I would also point out that I like food, and I think you like food too. And your grass doesn't feed anybody on your lawn, but the food that's being produced by farmers does. It also provides jobs. And same with industry. Industry is cutting back as well, but we need industry to make stuff. So it's always a false comparison, and it always kind of bothers me when people use that comparison, because the water that we're using for purely aesthetics versus water that we're using to keep our economy going and water we're using to feed people, it's not a similar comparison. But if you want to make that comparison, you're certainly welcome to. And if you're willing to cut back 70% of your water usage like farmers are, then we'd love to see it.
The next texter says that they've lived in Albuquerque, and they say there was an additional property tax assessed to homeowners who had lawns. And of course, they did away with their lawn and just had xeriscaping.
That's interesting. We actually do the opposite here in Utah. We actually, and this is part of, I think, one of the changes that we need to make, is we need to understand the true cost of water. And most people don't understand that, and there's a reason they don't understand that. And that is because in many jurisdictions, we subsidize water usage through our property taxes. So she mentioned that there was kind of a penalty in the property tax. We actually have the opposite. Everybody's property tax pays, not everybody's, but in most jurisdictions, property tax pays for water usage. And so people don't realize the true cost of water because it's just kind of buried in there. Mm-hmm. And I think just, again, metering so we know how much we're using, as well as understanding what the true cost of water is. People would use less if they knew they could save money. But if it's just part of your property tax, if I told you that your property tax would go down if you use less water, I think a lot of people would use less water. So those are some of the changes we would like to see happen. Not necessarily a penalty, but just understanding the true cost of water and then giving people an opportunity to save money by conserving.
Let's take a call from Don in Syracuse. Good afternoon, Don. What is your question for the governor?
Hi, thanks. Governor, I'm concerned about public radio in Utah that's associated with the universities. I tend to be open-minded about lots of things, but public radio is all liberal, one-sided commentary. I'm wondering if something can be done since my tax dollars are helping to pay for that, but I don't agree with their point of view.
Well, thank you, Don. So I'm not as familiar with all of the funding mechanisms around public radio. I do know that each newsroom sets their own policies and reporters choose what stories to cover. Public radio stations are nonprofit organizations, and I believe a small portion of their overall budgets do come from taxpayer dollars. But each station has its own board of directors, so if you're concerned about content or programming choices, I would certainly encourage you to contact those individual reporters or station managers. I'm a big believer in the First Amendment, and I appreciate the diversity of choices that listeners and readers have. I would encourage you, you know, if you disagree, certainly don't listen to them. You don't have to donate to them either. And so that's one way, I think, to let your own listening habits kind of do the talking, right? I'm concerned with bias in media everywhere. There is bias in media everywhere, it's just impossible to avoid. We're human beings. We all have biases. There are some great websites out there that track this kind of thing that can help all of us understand which news media are biased in which directions. There are news media that are biased on the right, news media that's biased on the left. I certainly tried to get a healthy dose of different viewpoints. I think it's a mistake for us to just surround ourselves with news media that only sees the world the same way we do. I like to listen to alternative points of view to kind of understand and maybe learn something, but also understand. So if I need to be able to argue, I know where they're coming from, and so I think it's healthy. I would always encourage people to stay away from the more extreme, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on there. But I don't know of any restrictions around their ability. Again, I think the First Amendment is very clear on our that we don't want to restrict their ability to cover news as they see fit, but certainly understand your concern. Thank you, Don.
And let's take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text your questions to the governor or your statements at 57500.
Questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and we are taking your calls and questions right now. You can also text us your questions or statements at 57500. Governor, this week, both the House and Senate have approved a new holiday, a new federal holiday, Juneteenth. I'm wondering what you think about the state's celebration and what that might look like.
Well, sure. Yeah, this is a big deal for our country, and certainly a welcome change to recognize this holiday for members of the Black community in our country. We've done something similar here in the state of Utah, recognizing Juneteenth, and it is not a holiday yet in that state workers get the day off. I understand that will be happening at the federal level, and so I would support that change here in our state as well in this upcoming legislative session. But we do have several celebrations going on all across the country. It's actually on Saturday is the day, although I think it will be recognized tomorrow at the federal level as an official holiday day off. But on Saturday, I know there are Juneteenth celebrations that are happening throughout the state, and I would encourage you to look at some of the local What's Happening calendars and get involved in some of the fun things that are happening to celebrate.
Governor, our next caller is Keith in Far West. Good afternoon, Keith. What is your question?
Good afternoon. How are you, Governor? First off, I want to thank you. I think you're doing a great job. You know, you come in with the COVID. Now we got a drought. We got fires. Good heavens, baptism by fire. But my question is to you. I mean, COVID's still going strong. How are we going to educate our older people about getting a shot? I just had an aunt pass away that didn't think the shot was worth it. What is your plan to get them people educated that the shot is worth it and it does help?
Yeah, thank you, Keith, and thank you for your kind words. I'm very sorry to hear about your aunt, and I have to admit, I can't wait to be governor at a time when we're not in some sort of a crisis. I'm really excited to get the pandemic over and get the drought over with and all the other things. But look, you bring up a very important question. Now, I want to share some good news with people. Most older people, a significant amount of older people, have been vaccinated. So we are, Utah is doing very, very well in this category. Almost 90%, I think it's 89.7, something like that. So I'm just going to call it 90% of those over the age of 65 have received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 80% have received, are fully vaccinated. So have received two doses or one dose of Johnson & Johnson. So I would love to see that be 100%, but we're doing very well. Now we have a big campaign, social media campaign, paid TV ads on TV and radio, and in Spanish on TV and radio. We talk to reporters every day about this. One of the things, though, that we think will help for that last group, right, that last 10% that is maybe a little hesitant, that hasn't been able to do it, get it right now, is we are giving more and more doses out to primary care physicians. So just, you know, doctors, the people that we trust, especially older people who tend to go to the doctor a little more often, they'll be able to have these communications one-on-one with their doctor so that they can talk about how the vaccines work, what the side effects possibly could be, and why they're so safe. And then the doctor can actually give the vaccine right there in their office. So they don't have to, you know, they have to get in a car and travel down to a pharmacy or someplace else. They can do it right there at their doctor's visit. So we're excited about that. What I would also do is encourage family members. We have lots of education materials available at coronavirus.utah.gov. You can go there, look at these education resources. We have flyers, videos, testimonials, myth-busting materials, and so much more. And hopefully you can help to convince your family members to get the vaccine. Thank you so much for that important question, Keith.
On the topic of vaccines, Governor, one of our texters has a suggestion. They say one of their favorite restaurants is a small business, and they're hosting a vaccine site for a day. They're wondering why we can't get more businesses to host vaccine events.
Yeah, well, that texter, whomever they are, is prescient. They're brilliant. They should be running our state. We're doing that. Actually, we sent out 10,000 letters to businesses just this past week, encouraging them to do exactly that. So what we're asking businesses to do is help us with kind of one big push as we get closer to July 4th to get more people vaccinated. We've asked them to consider incentives that they can offer to their customers and their employees, we have some businesses that have been doing $100 gift cards to their employees to get vaccinated. Some are doing $200 in cash for their employees to get vaccinated, offering them time off to get vaccinated, and then as the texter mentioned, to have to host a mobile vaccine clinic. We have lots of mobile vaccine clinics. We're scheduling them all the time to go to businesses to invite again their customers, the neighborhood, or their employees and their employees' families and extended families to come and get vaccinated. So, hey, look, we will do anything we possibly can. If you can get us people, we'll get the vaccines there.
Okay, next caller is Brock in Sandy. Good afternoon, Brock.
Hi, Governor. Thanks for taking the call. It's really great that you do this program. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you and to hear, you know, all the great things you're doing. I'm calling about the federal COVID unemployment and wondering if you would consider extending it for this reason. I know that there's a worker shortage, and of course in Utah we believe in hard work. The issue is not that people don't want to work. The issue is that people are not making a living wage. Companies have not kept up pace with the increase in housing and rent. Those have gone up exponentially over the last 10 years, and people are just not making enough money to live. Now, large corporations like McDonald's and Amazon have increased their wages, which is great. They can certainly afford to do that. So I'm wondering if you would consider extending the federal unemployment here in Utah, keeping it through the end of September, to stimulate these large corporations that are making big margins, you know, to increase wages so that Utahns can make a living wage and pay more taxes, which is good for the state. Would you consider that?
Well, Brock, thank you. Thank you so much for the question, and I appreciate that. And you're right. Unfortunately, the cost of living has gone up in Utah, and the cost of housing has gone up as well. Now, that is true of much of the West. And what we are seeing is that employers are increasing their salaries as they're competing for these employees. Those salaries continue to go up. We have over 70,000 jobs available in the state right now, and we have tens of thousands of jobs that pay more than $30 an hour. And so there are absolutely jobs for every person on unemployment right now. That would be losing that unemployment extension. There is a job that pays more than $30 an hour. Now, whether that employee is qualified for that job or not is another thing. And it's never been easier right now for an employee to get help for what it is that they need to get additional training. We do have federal money available for people who are struggling with paying their rent. There is rental assistance available. You can go to the Department of Workforce Services website. First of all, on the jobs side, jobs.utah.gov/career. That's jobs.utah.gov/career. All of the resources available right now are there for people to get a job and to get a better job than the job that they have right now. We also have rental assistance available. You can go to rentrelief.utah.gov to help with some of those increased expenses for those that are struggling. We actually have a lot of money available for rental assistance, more than we have demand for right now. So that is a great opportunity, rentrelief.utah.gov. But I just have to be honest with you. I believe it's detrimental to people, and I'm absolutely opposed to paying people not to work. It is one thing when you lose your job, and during a pandemic that happened, we needed those benefits. We still have unemployment benefits available for people who lose their jobs. But to continue to pay people not to work when we have good, high-paying jobs available, I believe is bad for society. I believe it's bad for business, and I believe it's bad for individuals. All of the data shows that the longer a person is not working and is on unemployment, the less likely it is that they are able to get back into the workforce, and the more likely it is that they will get stuck in this rut of intergenerational poverty, which is also very, very detrimental to people and to families over multiple generations. And so we have these jobs available right now. If the jobs you're qualified for don't pay a living wage, then we have resources available to you for you to get additional training so you can get a better job. And then we have this rental assistance available. So there are so many opportunities for people to get back into the workforce and get a job that does pay a living wage.
All right, let's take our last break of the show. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions and suggestions at 57500.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Our next texter, Governor, says, why can't we utilize city parks to light fireworks in? They're big, wide open areas with green grass, and it's far better than launching stuff over your neighbor's house.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion, and it's one I've been making to cities. We've had a couple cities that have decided to do that, that are limiting fireworks and encouraging people to go to their city park, where the fire department will be there all together so they can light them off and be well supervised. That's the kind of thing that absolutely works and makes sense when we're in exceptional drought. I'm going to be encouraging the legislature to change the law so that we just let the drought conditions determine when it's appropriate to have fireworks and when not. And when we're in exceptional drought, we shouldn't, but then we could have special places in every city that cities designate where people could do fireworks at the appropriate times and with the fire department right there in case something gets out of control.
Right. Next person wants to know what the state can do to clean up the shoulders of the roads. They don't want us to look like California.
Well, we don't want to look like California, except the beaches. I do like the beaches there, but the rest of it, yeah, they can have it. So we have several programs. In fact, we've been recognized as one of the cleanest states in the nation along our roadways. Our Adopt-a-Highway program has been incredibly successful. We have volunteer groups that are out there working to clean up the roads. We also use some of our incarcerated individuals in the state for road cleanup. At the county level and sometimes at the state level as well. And so if you or your group are interested in helping to clean up, put a group together and get a project, and we're more than willing to help you get out there and get those roads cleaned up.
All right, next caller is Troy in Tooele. Good afternoon, Troy.
How are you?
We're doing well. What is your question?
How are you doing, Governor? I just wanted to know... If Utah's planning on doing anything to fight the incoming inflation that's going to be here due to Biden printing money and not taking any money out of the system.
Troy, thank you for that question. It's something I've been very concerned about, and we've certainly expressed those concerns to the White House as well. You're right. It's not just that it's coming; it's that it's already here. We saw a significant inflationary increase, about 5%, over the last month, which is more than we've seen in a long, long time. And there really two things driving that inflation. One is, you already mentioned it, one is that the federal government is spending copious amounts of money, printing money that they don't have, and sending that out to the states and local governments, to individuals, as well as school districts. So one of the things that we're doing is making sure that we use our portion of that money responsible. If we're going to be borrowing money from our kids and grandkids, we better be investing it in things that will pay dividends for our kids and grandkids. And so we're talking about infrastructure, making sure that we're putting that money into places that make sense and will help our economy down the road. The other piece of this, though, is different. When any time, and I had a great meeting with the president of the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco, which is our region, a couple weeks ago. We talked specifically, I asked her specifically about inflation and what they were seeing. One thing that is true, and economists will tell you, that anytime you come out of a pandemic, you're going to see some inflation because people's ability to spend will and their desire to consume will outpace our ability to produce. It takes a while for supply chains to normalize and for production to ramp up. So the pandemic ends fairly suddenly, although obviously we're still working through it. But things got back to normal after vaccines pretty quickly, within a couple months. You know, we're mostly back to normal. And yet for companies, their ability to ramp up production is a little slower. We're calling it revenge consumption or revenge tourism, revenge travel, because for a whole year we weren't consuming and now we really want to. And so that piece will be normal. We also have to remember that other countries aren't doing as well as we are with the vaccine. So they're still in kind of shutdown mode, and many of the components that we need for our, you know, for our consumer goods are coming from other countries and they haven't ramped up yet. So long story short, the advice we were given was we'll know in about September how much of this is short-term inflation because of the pandemic, how much of it is long-term inflation because of inflationary spending happening at the federal government level. Unfortunately, there's just not much we can do as a state except be very wise about how we spend our dollars.
Governor, we just have 1 minute left in the program, but our next texter is asking, are you concerned about all the crowded gatherings such as Stadium of Fire, including a gigantic guest choir that's singing together in such close proximity?
I'm not concerned at all if they're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, I would be very concerned for you. So that's the only thing that's concerning. I can tell you that I've been going to events. I saw an incredible version of Les Miserables at Hale Center Theater, one of the best I've ever seen. Just impressive. I had a chance to go to a jazz game recently. Last night was my jazz game excursion. I'm a little angry and sad today because they lost, but not because
not because
I was in a big group, though, because I'm fully vaccinated and I'm protected. But for those that aren't, get your vaccine so you don't have to worry.
Governor, thank you so much for joining us again today, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Thanks, Maria.
And you've been listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor. Stay with us. Boyd Matheson, Inside Sources, coming up next.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.